Hey everybody, on today's episode of the Founder University podcast, we've got another two great talks. The first one is all about fundraising. You'll learn how to set up a fundraising process. So things like where to find investors and how to set up a pipeline. You'll also learn how to prepare for your first investor meeting, and you'll learn what to send an investor right after the meeting as a follow-up. After that, we've got a great talk from Eric Martin, head of sales at Vanta. He's going to walk us through how compliance wins deals. You'll learn what SOC 2 is and why you might consider it for your startup, and you'll learn how to use it to your advantage to win deals. All right, let's get into it.
Hey everybody, today on Founder University, the podcast, we're setting up a fundraising process and learning how to prepare for your first investor calls. As someone who's pitched my own startup for funding, and now having taken hundreds of founder calls as an investor, these are my best tips for success. Let's go. Today, we'll cover setting up a fundraising process. We'll review the funnel and how to stay organized. Then we'll prepare for your first investor meeting. And we'll wrap up with how to prepare for your post-meeting follow-up. Now we need to understand the fundraising funnel. This is the first step towards success in creating a fundraising process. Just like sales, fundraising is 100% a numbers game. Think of this as a funnel. Here is what it should look like. As you can see, in order to get a term sheet or potentially multiple term sheets in a hot fundraising market, you need to work backwards and ensure you have enough folks in the top of the funnel to get folks downstream at the bottom. So how do we fill the top of this funnel? First, you need to start a target list. Here are a few places to start looking for investors. As you're searching, please be mindful that you are targeting the right investors for your business. For example, if you are pre-seed, it's probably too early to pitch investors who participate at Series B onwards. If you have a D2C company, you want to focus on investors who invest in D2C companies. Seems simple, but we see this all the time. Also, note that firms have a thesis. It's not always public and transparent, but you can usually tell by their previous investments. And while you're doing this research, please triple check that the investors are still at the firm that you found them for, and that they still have a focus on the type of businesses that you think. This can be as simple as checking the firm's website, but since folks move around and jobs change, even in VC, this step will save you a lot of time and energy in the long run. Okay, a couple to point out here that are a little less obvious. You may see funding announcements that list investors, and you can pull leads from here for the top of the funnel. Also, founders are a great resource. If they have a connection, they may even be willing to give you a warm intro. Now, while we're talking about warm intros, each investor and firm have different expectations here. Some will require a warm intro, others have a complete open door policy, send the cold email, we love to get them, and others will require companies to reach out through their site or some other standardized form. Don't read too far into this, but do reach out in the way that they ask. It's going to help you get there faster. And now for Twitter. Twitter is such a powerful tool. You can search for things like active VCs, active investors, and then take that search a step further. You can add stage, for example. So search for active early stage investors or active seed stage investors. You can see on the examples here that these are really recent threads and they also have a ton of replies. In addition to finding lists by stage, you can keep searching even deeper on Twitter. Folks will often do lists and threads like this with specifics for technology, business model, industry. The example here is specifically calling out investors in AI who also do seed stage deals. If this is the type of investor you're looking for, this list is going to literally be a cheat sheet for you. So please take a look at Twitter and see how it might help. Great. Now you have your list of investors and you'll need to track the outreach of these results. Again, very similar to a sales pipeline. You'll want to have one place not only to keep the contact details for everyone you're reaching out to, but also track the stage of the process you're at with each of these different folks. So this doesn't have to be fancy and you don't need to use an expensive CRM. You can use tools like Google Sheets or Excel. I prefer Streak, which is an in-email CRM that's lightweight and has a freemium version. You can also use whatever CRM your team is currently using, but again, you don't necessarily have to buy something expensive to run this process. All right, let's talk about a few of the basic fields you'll want to track in your pipeline. First, name. The best practice here is for any CRM that you want to include the first name and the last name in separate columns or fields And this is so that you can mail merge and use tags to personalize emails without having a lot of manual work later on. You'll want to track email, the firm or company name, check size, do they lead, and how do they prefer to be contacted? Again, those Twitter lists probably will tell you all of these details and give you that cheat sheet to fill this in quickly. Then you'll want to track where in the funnel or the pipeline each of these folks are. Here are a few stages to get you started on creating your own pipeline. And please customize this, make it your own. This isn't the end all be all. It's just a few that we've seen work well. All right. First up, not yet contacted, pretty self-explanatory. This is when you've just found them, but not actually reached out. Then email or application sent. You know that you actually did your first step and you're waiting to hear back. Next, we have conversations started. Often there is some back and forth before the actual call is scheduled. So we like to have that broken out and have a specific stage for first call scheduled. Next up, we have post meeting one and two. There will be downtime in between meetings and conversations. So having a stage where they can kind of sit and you know exactly where they're at is going to, again, help you stay organized. Great. Now we're into the outcomes. You'll want to keep clear notes here. So when it's time to raise again, you can go back and know exactly where you left off with each one of these without having to dig into old emails or remember. All right. First up, we've got committed. This can also include companies you're in diligence with, or you can break those out if you prefer. Next is send monthly updates. This should be a pretty big list. Anyone who passed that may come in at a later date, you'll want to send updates again. Remember, investors like to invest in lines, not dots. And then these last two categories are probably going to be used sparingly. Not a good fit, we passed, is one that I like to use almost as a no-fly list. So this is for folks that you had a bad experience with, if that happens, unfortunately, or firms that maybe you're too early for, or you know that you're not a great fit for their investment thesis, which again, sometimes changes. So use this sparingly. And our last stage is they passed, don't add to updates. Again, this is going to be very infrequent when you want to use this, but a couple reasons you may want to not include investor on updates are things like they've invested in a very close competitor, which makes you feel uncomfortable, or you don't feel strongly that there's a chance for a relationship later on. Otherwise, go ahead and include them on your monthly updates. And again, when it's time to raise, you can circle back around with them. And before we leave here, the last step to creating your fundraising process is to hold yourself accountable. You should set some targets for outreach, investor calls, and even getting to a decision. Like sales, getting to a no is often hard, but it's better to know that early and redirect the energy. And a huge punch up here is whether you're using a spreadsheet or a CRM, you can actually have it auto-calculate how many days since your last interaction. And then this way, you don't get busy and leave a conversation to go cold on accident. Investors have lots of shiny objects, so responding quickly and staying top of mind is going to help you not get lost in the mix. Okay, I have to pause here. Also, like sales, you have to take the emotion out of the process. I see very often on Twitter threads of founders adamant about burning a bridge and never taking money from an investor who passed early on. But I suggest you take a step back. Remember, investors have several factors that they're considering when looking at your business. They have things like, does this fit into their thesis? How much of their fund has been deployed and how much is still available? How many investments are they aiming to make per quarter or per year? And where are they at with those targets? And also, how well does your business fit into all of this? So you'll never know all the factors for why an investor may have passed. And assuming they weren't rude or a really bad fit, I encourage you to reframe your expectations. Don't burn the bridge. And instead, remember that investors invest in lines, not dots. Add them to the updates and start building that relationship. You never know what might come of it. Great. On to our second agenda item today. We are figuring out what to do once you get a reply. You've got that interest, they're in your inbox. What do you do to prepare for that meeting? First of all, don't freeze. It may sound simple, but if you've never done this before, it can be super intimidating. So reply to the email, answer any questions that they asked, use very plain English, and just be normal. Also, you don't want to wait too long. Again, when you have their attention, you don't want to lose it. VCs expect founders to move fast, and if you take weeks to reply, you failed. And next up, we want to do our research on who you're speaking with. So this is going to help take the edge off if you're nervous and also help you prepare. So we've replied to the investor's email. We're getting the conversation scheduled. Now it's time to really prepare for that meeting. First up, you want to research the firm you're meeting with. You want to check things like their website and look them up on Twitter, LinkedIn, Crunchbase. Here, you're looking for a few different pieces of information. Things like what type of businesses have they invested in previously, what business models, what stage, and can you get an idea of their check size? Then you'll also want to research the person you're speaking to. It'll, one, make small talk a lot more comfortable, and two, it'll help you gauge how well they understand your business so you know how deep to go. So a couple examples here I think are really helpful. If you're an e-commerce marketplace and they were a founder of a marketplace, you can assume they're going to understand your business very well. In contrast, if you're building a highly technical product or building in an industry that they don't have deep experience in, you'll want to be mindful of the language you use and how deep you go. So for example, if you are pitching a security startup to an investor who doesn't have experience specifically working in security, you'll want to be mindful of how technical you are, as well as what acronyms you're using. Our next pre-meeting prep step is to send materials for them to review. Not all investors will have time to read through everything you send, but if they do, you'll be able to start the conversation on second base. Make sure that these materials are easy to access and quick to consume. If it's anything dense, it will probably be ignored. Some of the materials that you may want to send are things like a loom, which is great. A deck, also really helpful. You can also consider sending materials that overcome key objections you anticipate the investor will have. So for example, you might include a timely article that helps explain your why now, if that's a question you've received several times before and know that they're going to ask. All right, our last step of pre-meeting call prep. You want to have questions prepared. Here are some basic questions you can ask if you're not sure. So things like, what is your investment thesis and how do we fit into it? What size check do you write? Do you lead? And how many investments do you make a year? You can also ask things like, how do you support founders beyond the check? And here's a pointed one. What would it take for you to invest in our round? This last one here is really interesting, especially if you're talking to someone who's a little less senior. Understand that they can be a champion for you. You can ask, do you need anything from me to help you pitch this internally? This could be the difference in them asking for what they need and maybe too embarrassed to ask alone, or them passing because it's not handy and it's not outright clear. Great. Now, our last step of our session today, how do we prep our post-meeting follow-up? As a general rule, you'll want to follow up the same day or next. So everything you want to send afterwards, you should have prepared in advance so that you're avoiding the fire drill after the call. These are a few of the things that we suggest having prepared in advance. In your follow-up, here's a few things you can send. A deck, a loom, any requested items they had during the call. And here's the really critical piece to help you stand out. Follow up on any concerns or questions they had on your call, especially if you asked, what would it take for you to invest? Or do you have any concerns? And they outright tell you, go ahead and overcome those in your follow-up email, even if you talked about it on the call. Here's a great example. If they ask about market size and seem skeptical with your response, you can send a bottom-up TAM and any supporting links or data to help you explain how the market is actually what you think it is and not what they have made assumptions based on. So let's imagine you have your call and you don't hear back. It is okay to follow up and ping them in a week or two. Please note though, every time you ping an investor, you want to have something of substance to share, not just, hey, floating this to the top. You'll want to include either some update to catch their attention or some new piece of information that will get them re-excited. Rather than, hey, floating this to the top, a better option would be just checking in to see if you needed any additional information. Since our meeting, I've signed 2 new customers and crossed 20,000 in monthly revenue. And if you don't hear back, go ahead, add them to your monthly updates so that you're staying top of mind and hopefully you can convert them over time. All right, folks. That's it for today's episode of Founder University, the podcast. Thanks for joining me as we set up a fundraising process and prepare to crush it in our first investor calls.
Hello, everybody. My name is Eric Martin. I'm the head of sales here at Vanta, here to talk to you today about why compliance wins deals. In today's session, we're going to talk about kind of what is a SOC 2? Why do companies pursue a SOC 2? I'll speak to other common kind of third-party audits that startups pursue, but SOC 2 is an easy one to latch on to for especially companies based in North America. We'll talk about common costs and timelines. We'll talk about how to use your SOC 2 more often than not to accelerate the growth of your business. And then this is a podcast, so we won't have any Q&A.
So first things first, what is a SOC 2? SOC 2 is a standard created by the American Institute of CPAs. It's an audit that's literally audited by a certified public accountant. I know that might be a head scratcher, but that is just the way that it is. What is it literally? It's literally a PDF report that communicates your company's kind of security processes and procedures, both internally, but more often than not, externally. So why pursue a SOC 2 or maybe some other framework, whether it's ISO 27001, if you're selling internationally, or maybe it's a self-attested GDPR, if you're processing PII, et cetera. Why pursue one of these things? You're probably pursuing them because you have to. You know, you, your co-founder, or your kind of maybe your first sales rep is in the trenches, trying to demonstrate product value, you know, product market fit. They are kind of at that point where someone is excited to sign up for whatever it is that you've built. Congratulations. But they're wanting you to go through some kind of formal kind of risk assessment or security review. More often than not, when you receive those, at the very top of the questionnaire is this kind of like, hey, do you guys have a SOC 2? And if the answer is yes, kind of skip to go. If not, fill out this lengthy questionnaire. So that you, TLDR, why are we chatting? Why are you listening to this? Probably because you've been asked for one of these third-party audits at one point in time. It's also worth calling out that whether or not this is a need to have, you may be getting this to accelerate the growth of your business. There are any number of businesses that exist where having a SOC 2 is just table stakes, even if you are kind of newly incorporated and don't even have a product built. A good example would be fintech companies. We sign up fintech startups every single week who are still building their first product, but they know either kind of from previous kind of work experiences or through investors and advisors that this is just table stakes. So in any case, that's why. All right, costs and timelines. So if you want to sound smart in the world of compliance, when people ask you questions, just always answer, it depends. And the same is true for kind of how much is this going to cost you? How kind of long or short, you know, how much time is this going to take to get done? The fastest that I've seen over the last 4 years at Vanta is someone going from zero to having a SOC 2 Type 1 in hand in 5 working days. We actually have a promo at the end of this where kind of it's like, hey, get your SOC 2 in 10 days for $10K. That includes kind of the software fee and the audit fee. Generally, when you're thinking about approaching this, there are two costs. There's the cost of the compliance automation software, a la Vanta, and there is the cost of the actual that goes to the CPA to perform the actual audit. Think of it like an audit filing fee. Over the years, we've seen these costs go down, down, down. That is great news for you. We've also seen the automation go up, up, up. And so typically when we think about, you know, how much time do you want to spend or will you need to spend kind of going about this exercise? Conservatively, early stage startup, you know, fewer than 50 employees, let's call it 40 human hours. But really, this just depends. Someone's going to draw the short straw. You know, they're going to be the one that has to kind of lead this project. The benefit to you is that, you know, this is pretty straightforward at this point in time, especially if you're leveraging a tool like Vanta. We have, you know, a dedicated customer success that we'll pair you with, as well as in-house CPAs, security experts, et cetera, to make sure that, like, truly, you know, the order of operations when attacking this. But conservatively, let's call it 40 hours. So how to use your SOC 2? So as I said, kind of at the beginning, why are you considering this in the first place? Probably because you have to. How are you going to use this? I think that will also more often than not just be obvious for you. That said, we've built a product called the Trust Report that allows you to kind of publicly demonstrate your security posture. You can communicate which audits your company goes through annually. Because Vanta kind of works from the inside out, we'll show your prospects technical controls that are quite literally currently in a passing state. You can upload previously filled out questionnaires there. The TLDR is that, like, just as soon as you or kind of your co-founder or your first sales rep or kind of your sales team broadly kind of gets asked, you know, or gets notified that you're going to have to go through a security or a risk assessment, you can do things like share your SOC report. You can do things like share your trust report. Technically, you are, before sharing your SOC 2, supposed to have companies sign an NDA. So once again, kind of go about doing that. If you share your Vanta trust report, you give the opportunity for these folks to self-serve, sign a click-wrap NDA. But ultimately, what does this do? This demonstrates that, like, you're on top of it. You know, it's still impressive, even though kind of Vanta's been around for half a decade at this point, it's still impressive when an early stage company can lead with a SOC 2 or can lead with an ISO 27001 certificate, especially in the earliest of stages. If nothing else, it just reduces the anxiety of the folks that you're going to work with, not explicitly communicating that you are kind of safer to work with, but that like you are thoughtful about kind of how you're, you know, which third party vendors you're leveraging, how you're leveraging them, who you're giving access to them, et cetera. Wrapping things up here, I mentioned earlier in the kind of costs and timelines that, you know, we've seen companies get a SOC 2 as quickly as 5 days. We have a special offer for all of you where kind of you can kind of go about this kind of, I think, SOC 2 in 2 weeks for a fixed rate that includes the cost of the software as well as the audit filing fee. You can learn more at vanta.com/landing/SOC2in2weeks. I think you're probably seeing this slide. We'll also send it to you via email if you'd like. Kind of on a thank you parting note here. If you have questions for me, feel free to email me, eric@vanta.com. You know, having been here since the kind of the earliest of days, I will say one of the kind of really cool things about kind of creating a new category that is so kind of used and useful for kind of early stage businesses is that like we've built this to help you kind of get out of your own way and focus on the things that you care about and that matter to your business most. Spending more time on kind of business building initiatives and less time on kind of these admin kind of grunt work things, if I were to kind of put compliance into that bucket, at least at the early stages. And so once again, don't be afraid of this exercise. We've seen companies, you know, probably smaller than yours, kind of go get this thing done and get it done efficiently, which, you know, leads me to say that, hey, like you too should be confident that this is an exercise that you can bite off and swallow regardless of kind of your size, maturity, et cetera. So in any case, thanks for joining me today and best of luck.
Okay, that's a wrap for today's episode. And if you want to see more tactical content, be sure to hit the subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcast player. If you want to rate and subscribe, that's great. And if you've got an idea right now and you're inspired to build an MVP or an idea that you want to build into an actual company, just apply to my 12-week course, Founder University, at founder.university/apply. It's free to come to the Founder University if you come to all 12 weeks. And we invest $25,000 in the top graduates to help them grow even more. Again, you can apply for the upcoming cohort, founder.university/apply. And if you would like to give a tactical talk here on this pod, you can submit your presentation at founder.university/submit.